Hi everyone and welcome to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. I'm here with, of all people, my shit TV soulmate, Faith Richardson.
Hi guys, I'm so into these intros. I want a full list of them.
I'm running out of synonyms for friend, so I'm going to have to start getting creative pretty soon. But for now, I'm just going to ride the wave.
That's fine. Roll with it.
So I've been Zoom dating.
Have you? How has this gone?
Which is never a phrase that I thought I would employ. In fact, 3 weeks into lockdown, I posted something on Facebook saying, someone just asked me to go on a Zoom date. I would like to exit the simulation now. Thank you. I've learned my lesson about community spirit. And then someone commented and said, well, I think it sounds like a really cute idea. And I said, unclear as to why I would go on a date where no one is buying me any food or drinks. Obviously, that was 3 weeks into my personal lockdown, because I was locking myself down slightly longer. So by week, wherever we're up to, week seven, week eight.
Oh, I think we're past that now. I think we're nearing like week 12, maybe.
We're definitely on like day 69 or something.
I think it was the 23rd of March where it was official. So where are we? March, April, May. 2.5 months? No, 2 months. I've lost all thread of time.
Yeah, well, anyway, I had to eat my words eventually because, you know, even I thought, well, you know, I need some kind of male attention.
Some form of contact.
So anyway, I have been Zooming with this just one person for the past, I think, 5 weeks now, which is pretty wild. And we bonded over 90 Day Fiancé. So we started watching that together and like texting throughout it and like commenting on it. So it's almost like watching TV with someone, but just what you'd say out loud if they were on the sofa with you. We just text each other. And then yesterday, things kind of took the next step and escalated, and we decided that we were going to move on to a TV show called A Very British Hotel Chain in Best Western.
Incredible. I think you've found your soulmate here. There is very few people on this planet who would be just as into 90 Day Fiancé as a program about Best Western.
Now, I don't believe in soulmates, but I will say that we are very much aligned on our TV taste, which bodes very well. Now, have you seen any adverts for this show?
I haven't. I am in the dark about this one completely.
It's basically about the headquarters of Best Western, which is almost like a kind of umbrella group for a load of independent hotels. And from what I understand, they help them to like set the standards of things. And they kind of help like the small businesses be more sustainable because they have like a lot of corporate money behind them. And from what I understand, they almost like support those smaller hotels. And okay, the smaller hotels pay them a fee or whatever, you know, in exchange for that. But it's just the most kind of garbagey thing. I don't know, did you ever watch The Call Centre?
No, I never watched that either. Oh, I've been flipping.
It's a good genre of British TV. They did one inside Iceland as well, like the budget supermarket. And they just profile all of like the characters and these people that work inside it. And it's such a good mix of being utterly hilarious and just being slightly bleak, because they're all kind of shitty hotels that are just off main roads, you know, in places like Swindon or Stoke, you know, these nowhere places where it's like, who's going to go on holiday there?
Yeah.
You know, you'd probably stop off on your way to somewhere else.
Motorway.
It's so good. So they profiled one yesterday where the receptionist was getting married in the hotel itself because she was like, well, this is my second home. They couldn't do it at the football grounds of their local team, which is what they really wanted. So they did it in the hotel, and the husband wore a football jersey.
That sounds like my personal nightmare.
I really think you should watch it. I think you would love it. It's got tinges of Gordon Ramsay's Hotel Hell.
Oh, I did love that. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
There's no like agitator coming in, but there's sort of like a wanky CEO that, like, you know, he's like, these are the new rules. He's an Aussie. He's like, smash it, you know, positive, create synergy, whatever. And yeah, it's just absolute trash. And I'm happy to be on this journey. And I feel like maybe all dating should just be done by like remotely TV viewing with someone before you actually meet them properly, because it tells you a lot about a person.
I was gonna say, I think you can know a lot about a person from the kind of TV that they watch. Now, me and Greg have like quite a massive Venn diagram of taste in TV. So we have a good overlap in the middle, and it usually centers around like crime dramas and thrillers and all of that sort of thing. But whereas my half of the Venn diagram is reality TV and something a little bit trashy and like all that sort of stuff, Greg recently has decided that he's very into that one where it's just walking the ancient railways of the British Isles.
Oh, no. No, like a Michael Portillo canal moment.
Yeah. So as you can see, we're lucky that we found the overlap in the middle, because we're on wildly different planes when it comes to everything else.
No, you do have to have a happy medium, I think.
Absolutely. And I mean, he's welcome to put on Time Team as long as I get to just go sit in the other room and watch like Real Housewives.
I remember my ex's favourite show was like Mega Factories.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
Made. It's just going inside a factory. I mean, he's a factory engineer, so it was all it was like machine porn, you know. It was just like big steel things and, you know, pumps and presses, and I couldn't get into it. I mean, I tried.
I think as long as you make the commitment to try, like I've tried with Time Team and I just can't get away with it. So that's very much something for him to do by himself.
Yeah, you just have to sit there glassy-eyed and just kind of strained smile for a bit.
Yeah, that sort of semi-blank, dead behind the eyes expression while your brain is like...
So the one thing, this guy that I've been Zooming with, I don't even want to say dating because that sounds so weird for someone that you haven't actually met, but yeah, whatever.
It's like really formal for someone you've not even sort of been in the same vicinity of.
I know, it does sound strange, but anyway, I guess that is kind of what it is. We were talking and he was like, yeah, because we watched the pirate episode of Roni.
Incredible.
And he was like, I don't know, like, I just didn't really get Roni. Like, I wasn't really sure what was going on. And I was like, oh, shit, like, I chose the wrong episode because, like, I need to find a way to bring him round to it. So I need to work out, like, what content I can get him on board with to hook him in.
Yeah, we'll have to come up with, like, a sort of plan of which episodes you need to show him, like, from each series so he gets a good understanding of what's happening.
Yeah, I think he didn't have enough context to the pirate episode, which is my thought.
Quite possibly. Possibly needed one where it's like early sort of like Alex McCord days, and then maybe Scary Island kind of vibes.
Scary Island might be a good shout.
Scary Island's always a good shout.
Anything where Simon Van Kempen makes an appearance. Yeah. And I actually stan Simon so much.
I love him secretly, deep down. Him and Alex's relationship is just goals. Like that complete lack of awareness or fucks to give about what people think about their relationship. They clearly just found each other and were like, this is it. It's never going to be better.
They are each other's person.
Aren't they? Like through and through.
Anyway. It's good stuff, you know. It's a happy sort of side of lockdown for me at the minute, I gotta say, which is kind of nice.
Oh, I'm pleased that you found it though. I'm pleased that you've given it a try now.
Yeah, yeah, I needed to get over myself, I think was my my general issue, as it is so many times in life. And he did also send me chocolates to my office, so he did buy me some food.
Well, exactly. I mean, he's already broached that subject, so it's fine. It's a natural second date.
I'm just worried that I'll be so nervous to meet him properly,
like suddenly there's all this pressure. But I think if you can have good chemistry like without even being around each other, it's probably a good sign.
I know, and I'm like slightly reassured by the fact that everyone is so gagging for it anyway.
Yeah,
you know, even if he doesn't find me attractive IRL, he'll probably just be like, oh, well, sod it.
Yeah, where are we now? It's been a while.
Because my dreams have gone from being like completely surreal to now being super like very like mundane. So I literally dreamed yesterday that he came round and we were watching some TV and we were social distancing on my sofa. And then eventually I was just like, oh, this is ridiculous. And then I just like went and sat next to him and he put his arm around me and like that was the dream.
All your wildest fantasies in the world, Lou, and that was what you
dreamt. Literally, I was just like, I just really need to be held at this point. Hardly like the steamy content that
that we've come to expect from you.
Don't know what you're saying. Right, getting into Roni, my initial thoughts, I felt like this episode got uncomfortable.
Yeah, I did as well. And I never ever thought these words would leave my mouth, but this whole episode I sort of agreed with Dorinda.
Oh, the entire way through?
Almost. I mean, there was definitely moments where I was like, stop talking now, you've ruined it again. But
okay,
the overall conclusion of what she was saying, I was kind of like, yeah.
I see you agree with Dorinda, and I raise you I actually thought Ramona dealt with it quite well.
I also thought this.
This is terrible.
What is happening? The world has gone literally upside down.
What have we done to the world? Look what we've done. Yeah, it felt like an aggravation of the kind of Sonia drinking last episode, where already we said it was kind of verging from the comical into just being quite obnoxious and quite hard to watch.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the drinking that went on in this episode, and I think Leah even sort of alluded to it as well, it was like from a place of uncomfortability and pain rather than like, oh, I just got a bit carried away. I think this was very much an episode of drinking to get to that state.
It was from a place of being ghosted by a very mediocre man, which is exactly why I spent my first 3 weeks of lockdown in like a vague haze. So I get it, but I think it was proof to me that Leah is not as in control as she might think. I mean, I know with the tiki torches, people would probably say, oh, for God's sake, like, was that not obvious earlier? But actually, because that was just kind of silliness, you know, that's like skinny dipping silliness. That to me is sort of different and more acceptable than like what this was.
Yeah. And I think the difference of the tiki torches scenario was that that was like the end of a party where it'd been a natural progression of everybody had been drinking and everybody was getting a bit sillier and everybody was drunker. And this was like arrive at a sit down dinner hammered when nobody else is.
Quite literally. We open up the episode. Sonia is at her place and she still has an intern packing for her. And I'm so pleased because no matter how much the world is upended, it just reassures me to know that there are still some constants.
Sonia will literally be having an intern packing her into her coffin when she dies.
And she'll still be making comments about it.
I truly don't know how that woman would ever function without a full rotary of voluntary staff.
I don't know how she does, because actually it's very stressful and difficult to manage people, especially when they're all sort of part-timing, dropping in and dropping out. Like, I'm quite impressed that she's able to stay on top of things.
I know. And it's like, she kind of like, nobody has like a definitive role. It's not like she has like somebody who's literally there to pack her like shit up for her, or somebody who's just like an assistant. They all just have these really vague intern title that really means nothing. And they just seem to do everything from like picking up her dog's shit in the garden to handing her like vitamins in the morning. And it's very weird. It's such a broad spectrum. I don't know how she manages.
It is life experience though.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's preparing you for many things.
To be fair, if I was like a young, youthful, like late teens, early 20s living in New York, I'd probably be like, this is fucking great. It's like a fly on the wall documentary.
I tell you what, it's better than what I actually did as an intern at that age, which was photocopy and make coffee and just sit at a computer wondering how I could like not be in anyone's way.
Yeah, no, literally, I was the same when I did one of my internships, and like I enjoyed it and I got to be at photo shoots, but my job was literally unbuttoning shirts, handing a shirt to somebody while the model put it on, and then putting a shirt back on a hanger. Like, that was it. That was my job.
So Leah FaceTimes Ramona, who looks like she's stuck on the inside of a spaceship. In fact, I was thinking about this. I reckon she is on a spaceship. I think the Tommy toning treatment is a full-on fabrication. I think she's trying to throw us off the scent. I think what's actually happening is she's getting some kind of advanced Martian plasma therapy to keep her youthful before she gets dropped off back on Earth. And I think that overall the aliens take good care of her. I think maybe she's a hybrid of like an alien and a human perhaps. But like the one thing that they didn't quite finish as they were kind of teaching her how to assimilate was how to blink properly. You know, they didn't quite finish like facial expressions 101. So they thought, well, we'll pump her full of Botox and that will stop most of the problems. But obviously the eyes are still going to be very starry. But they just thought, oh, you know, I'm sure it'll be fine. No one's going to notice. Drop her on her Earth mission.
Oh God, that's the most beautiful elaborate theory I've ever heard in my life.
Be amazed at how fast that spiraled.
I mean, you really went somewhere with that story, but I happen to think you're absolutely on the money with it.
We're then at Dorinda's house in the Berkshires, which is being reconstructed and renovated.
I mean, that flood damage did actually look quite bad. And it was worse than they made it seem in earlier episodes. So I can kind of understand, and especially what we were saying last week about it obviously brought up some emotional trauma.
I was just going to say, like, I was shocked that it's taken 4 months to have everything dry out before they could even intervene. Like, that would be very frustrating. I do get that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of my best friends, like, her and her partner just bought their house. They'd literally spent months, like, renovating it because it was, like, a full old lady house. Like, everything needed ripping out and replastering and new flooring and all that, and they just finished everything. And then they both got home from work and were like, are you running a bath? And she was like, no, you running a bath? And he was like, no. And they ran upstairs and basically a pipe had burst underneath their bath, and the sound that sounded like a bath running was actually water like cascading into their literally just finished that weekend kitchen.
No.
So it literally, she ran barefoot down the street to the fire station that happened to be at the end of the road and brought three firemen back to help them pull the stopcock out because it had broken and repair it enough to get the water to stop. But it took them maybe 3 months to fully dry out the kitchen enough to be able to fit like their oven and things back in.
Oh my God, that's so traumatic.
Isn't it? It's truly my worst nightmare. I was like, I wouldn't even know what to do. I think running down the street in my bare feet would be about it.
I am so bad in an emergency.
See, I'm weird. I'm good in an emergency, but things like that where I just have no sort of like technical knowledge about what the fuck to do. Like if somebody breaks an arm or falls off a cliff or something, great. I'm the person you want there. If my house is flooding, I'm like, wouldn't even know where to start.
I know. What is a stopcock? What do I need to do with it or not do with it?
I mean, I'd truly be at sea with that. So it's probably for the best that I don't live alone.
The girls meet up and Tinsley comes with a cushion tucked under her arm and Luana's like, oh, it's adorable. She's such a child. Tinsley does not appreciate that comment. And she's like, no, I'm just allergic. I've got allergies. And it's like, of course you're allergic to pillow stuffing. It's the most Tinsley thing to be allergic to.
She can't have these plebeian pillows that might have polyester or an unnatural fibre stuffing.
So they all crowd into a minivan. Leah's coming in strong with a compliment vis-a-vis Ramona.
She was so up Ramona's ass. You could tell she was angling for something about it because Leah is just not that nice to anybody. Like, she's perfectly lovely, but that level of, like, laying on the, oh, you look 25. Like, oh, what have you been doing? You look so youthful. It was like, you're coming for something.
Yeah, we knew that there was going to be a request made.
I love that Sonia was just like, she's trying to get the biggest room. Like, it was sacrilege.
But also solid techniques. I mean
she's clearly worked Ramona out very quickly.
Also, another thing, a seatbelt's considered optional extras in the States. To me, it's crazy that they're on the motorway for 3 hours just sitting there, not strapped in anyway.
I don't know, actually. I don't know what the rules are in America. I remember when we did like our school trip to America, we were on a school bus, and I can't remember if they had like actual seatbelts.
It probably violates some kind of constitutional.
Yeah. My constitutional right to move freely.
Yeah. Because I'm pretty sure when I've been in, even in like limos and stuff in the UK, I've had seatbelts.
Yeah, I think we always have them. Like, no matter what kind of seating arrangement it is, you have to have a seatbelt. But maybe the Americans just don't care. Maybe they're just too rich to care.
They also are much better drivers, I feel.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they're all doing it from, like, age 5.
Yeah. License optional.
Dorinda's already at the hotel checking in. And Elise, back in the van, suggests playing the most humbling moment game, which is not the catchiest game, you know, not necessarily one that I'm familiar with. But I did wonder, do you have, like, a humbling moment that stands out to you?
Oh, I don't really know in terms. I think for me as well, though, I always struggle because I'm so self-depreciating that I find that I'm sort of far below humble. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm always just assuming that I'm doing poorly at everything.
I'm a bit like that too. Like, I'll outwardly pretend not to be, but then deep down I'm like, I am always my own worst enemy and my own worst critic. But I think I'm definitely, I especially used to be really oblivious.
Yeah.
So what I kind of thought about when I thought about my most humbling moment was when I came to uni in London, I got thrown in with lots of people from different backgrounds. And like, I always knew that I had like a privileged life and a good life, but I don't think I realized to what extent, like how sheltered I was, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I guess I kind of had a little bit of that as well when I left like my private school for like my A-levels, and I went to like a regular sixth form and then a regular college after that. And I think I realized then how easy I'd actually had it. And like I said before, like we were not a particularly well-off family. Like we were probably one of the poorer families in my private school. But then to go from that to seeing how other people were really struggling was quite humbling, I guess.
Yeah, like just completely like different worlds. And I remember at uni that one of my flatmates was upset because she got her hours cut at work. And I literally remember saying to her, "That's good, isn't it? You don't have to do as much work." And she turned to me and she was like, "Yeah, but that means I get less money towards my rent." And honestly, and I'm so embarrassed by this obviously now, but like me is, I had just turned 18. I turned 18 like a couple of days before I moved to London.
Because yeah.
The years are like done differently. And like it hadn't even dawned on me that that would be a concern for someone. And like now I'm just like, you're such an idiot. But like, good to look back on these things and be like, okay, like I've definitely come a long way and learned a lot about the realities of the world and had a big reality check. So
yeah, and I'm the same. I mean, I think I've always had this like the security of like my parents will always just like bail me out if I get into some kind of situation, or if I was like living somewhere and couldn't afford my rent or whatever, suddenly for whatever reason they would bail me out as best they could, you know what I mean? So I don't think I've ever had that sort of like genuine fear of being homeless or without food or having to rely on food banks and things like that. So it's kind of weird when you think about it.
However, Elisa's idea of a humbling moment is that she thought she got catcalled and then they were actually catcalling someone else behind her. And this was apparently, you know, really made her remember her humility. And
out of everything that's happened in her presumably long and fruitful life, and obviously a very exciting life, that was the one thing that was like, oh, I'm not as hot as I thought I was.
Standout moment. A couple reset for Elise. Leah and Peter Chip seem to be over. He did not call her prior to her dinner reservations, I guess, to confirm.
Yeah, I couldn't really follow this story. Like, I didn't understand quite what it was that she was so upset about. Like, I couldn't work out if it was that he didn't call at all or if he didn't call in time, or it just seems weird to me that this was what pissed her off and not the him screenshotting her nudes and sending them back to her.
Yeah, it feels like very skewed priorities in that sense. From what I understood from the story, it was that he was or did call her back, but it was like very late on in the day, and I do I do get that, because I hate it when people assume that, like, you don't have other things going on and that they can just sort of breeze in and be like, oh, you know, we'll do it, you know, at this time. And it's, it does frustrate me when people assume that you've got sort of a clear schedule. But then she seems to have taken it extremely badly and then accused him of being gay, which is very, it's an un-PC and it's an odd reaction.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of strange as well. Like, and especially considering she's already proved that she's, like, incredibly liberal-minded and very open and that sort of thing. And obviously she cares a lot about things like Black Lives Matter and stuff, which she's talked about. So it seemed like such a weird sort of thing to throw that back at somebody.
Yeah, but she was also talking about, like, guys with big dicks at the winery, wasn't she? Which, again, I hate that double standard of women that will go down that route, but then, you know, presumably get really pissed off if men comment on women's bodies, because it is adjacent. I'm sorry, it's a similar thing to shame a man for that as it is to shame a woman for her body.
Absolutely. And I don't think there should be a difference or a distinction. And, like, I get that some people are like, well, if they can do it, then we can do it. It's like, no, but the point is nobody should be doing it. Like, that's not creating an equal playing field. That's just both being as bad as each other. So I never really understood that sort of mentality and that kind of outlook on things as well.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of like just digging for a reaction, isn't it? Because you know it's something that you can say to someone to really kind of damage their self-esteem, as it is to say to anyone, oh my God, I remember on one of the dating apps, one of my prompts or whatever was something about being easily offended or something. So I think my response was like, yeah, like, I'm pretty difficult to offend or something.
Yeah.
Or, you know, try and offend me. But it was in the context of, like, you know, like, stupid humor or whatever. And this guy messaged me and he was like, your chin looks like balls. And he was like, so what do you think about that? And I was like,
my God.
I didn't know what to say.
I mean, it's not like it was a challenge. Like,
no, it
it's not like, how badly can you offend me before you've even introduced yourself?
It was wild. It was some Hinge fuck boy. And then I was like, do I respond? Then I was like, oh, nah, whatever.
Yeah. I'm not really into that. You don't need to explain to them why that's just bizarre.
No, exactly. So I think at this point we get the first glimpse of Hurricane Leah sort of manifesting herself, but at least she seems self-aware enough to realize it. I mean, she kind of comments in the testimonial and says, you know, I'm just not feeling it. I'm not in a good place.
Yeah. And she's kind of saying that she doesn't feel like she knows him all that well, which I saw on her Instagram was like her reason for saying that she wanted to invite her sister was because she was still feeling a bit uncomfortable and a bit on edge with, like, the women, so she wanted her sister there just as kind of moral support.
Yeah, I mean, do you think it was okay for her to invite her sister?
I think it's strange. Like, I think it's okay to ask, but I agree that she should have asked earlier and not while they were already on the way. Like, if she'd have even just, like, texted or called Ramona, like, the day before and been like, hey, look, would you mind if she came? Then that's one thing. But to ask on the bus seems a little bit sort of, like, thoughtless. But then also Ramona could have just said no and that could have been it.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a pretty odd thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, she got fixed it as well with saying that, like, her sister had just had, like, a baby and had, like, a 7-month baby. And if somebody had put to me, like, oh, can my sister with her 7-month baby just come on this girls trip? I'd be like, well, not really, no. Like, she never mentioned whether the baby was coming or not, but at 7 months, you'd kind of think, maybe.
Yeah, that's not really, like, an environment to bring a child into. No, I don't know.
Not really girl trip material.
No, and I also feel like these ladies, like, they're just of a different age bracket, and they're kind of, you know, I think they thought it was a bit strange, like, what, you want, like, backup?
Yeah, and I can see why that would be a little bit offensive as well, of kind of like, oh, well, we're meant to be getting to know each other, and it seems then like you don't really want to get to know me.
I mean, Ramona thinks it's a bad idea to introduce a new actor into the group, and she thinks it might risk throwing off the energy. So at this point, they decide to shelve the conversation for the time being. They kind of rock and roll into Newport. Newport as a place just makes me laugh because Newport in South Wales is where my late grandmother lived.
And really?
The heroin capital of the United Kingdom and probably the worst place I've ever been.
They made like made out like Rhode Island was like a mini Hamptons kind of vibe.
Oh yeah, it's definitely got that look. So they all pick up a cocktail on the way in, including Luann.
Oh, I know, I saw that. I noticed that little sneaky pickup on the way in.
Although she held it together, so
she did. I was quite impressed.
Sorry, I wonder if the fact that there was so much kind of external chaos made it easier for her to kind of pace herself.
Yeah, and kind of slip into more comfortable, regular drinking like, habits.
So they immediately order a bunch of oysters. Tinsley and Dorinda have a very friendly hello, which is kind of a sign of a reconciliation to come.
Yeah, I felt like we maybe missed some context in between that where they've kind of squashed things a little bit better.
They must have done, because it did seem odd, you know, to go from the place that they were at the orchard straight to this.
Yeah, it seemed really weird. And even that kind of thing at the Russian spa, it didn't seem like they'd settled things enough for this to be their greeting. So I can only assume things happened in between.
Leah isn't eating and she's looking, I would say, extremely pissed off. Like, to be fair, the only time in my life that I experience a loss of appetite is when I'm genuinely deeply upset or insanely angry.
Yeah, anger for me. Like, I'm not one of these people where when they get like depressed or whatever, I don't eat, I go the other way. But when I'm angry, the idea of eating is just something I can't even comprehend. So I think something happened between that bus scene and between them sitting down, because she suddenly seems a lot more pissed off about things.
Yeah, there's some time elapsed, I think, because she suddenly got a real sort of off face with it. And she sidles up to Ramona to ask about the sister question again. And she obviously wants some family backup. And then Ramona decides that they're going to take a vote on it.
Which just seems like such a sort of slightly juvenile way of kind of making her feel more left out, I think. I think Ramona should just be like, no. And that's it. I think the kind of the backing and forthing and the toing and froing has just made it worse.
Frankly, I'm shocked that Ramona gravitated towards a democratic system to get this worked out, because in my mind, Ramona just goes straight to totalitarianism. Do you know what I mean? There's no kind of involving the people, community action. It's just straight away what I say goes. So I thought it was very odd that she even entertained the idea of a vote.
I know. I mean, there was a lot of things happened in this episode that were very un-Ramona, which I was quite shocked about.
Leah then points out that Elise is there and is basically irrelevant to everyone's lives. And you just cut to Elise sort of sitting there,
looking kind of like she's trying to pretend she didn't just hear that.
It's so awkward. They're literally motioning to her like she's not even in the room.
I know, I found that so uncomfortable. And also, didn't you say, like, oh, you invited Elise and you're not even speaking to her?
Yeah.
Which I thought was weird, because obviously we've heard nothing about why Ramona and Elise might not be friendly, and they didn't seem like they weren't talking in the van or anything like that, so...
We haven't heard anything about why Elise is there full stop.
No, she's just suddenly here at all given times. Like, I don't know if it's, like, a production ordered thing or what.
I mean, look, I actually like Elise.
Yeah, I do as well. I'm not complaining that she's there. It just seems very strange.
Sonia decides she's going to make a point of this for whatever reason. She's wearing that weird, like, patchy sequin mesh top in the testimonial again. So I'm assuming it's from her brand.
Yeah, I can only assume that's the only excuse anybody would have to wear that top was if they had to make it.
If they were desperately trying to flog it to people. Dorinda and Tinsley are on the same side, and the first time in forever, and both think that Leah's sister should be able to come, but it's all still kind of playful at this stage.
Yeah, it doesn't seem too sort of serious or too kind of like real tensions brewing. Like, you can tell Leah's pissed off that she might not be there, but it doesn't seem like it's going to escalate the way that it does later on.
Yeah, and Leah actually does get a majority vote in favour of her sister coming.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess Ramona sort of shot herself in the foot there and kind of ended up obviously having to say, well, okay, fine, she can come. But I don't know, there was just something so weird about the whole situation where it felt very off for all of the women.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I also don't understand why this season Sonia just seems to be like jumping on everybody else's weird arguments. Like, she's so like very strongly opinionated about things that I don't understand why she's so involved in.
I'm used to Sonia being more of a kind of light comic relief, and if she's wading into arguments, it's only to kind of diffuse the tension from them, whereas this, she seems to be sort of aggressively actually trying to aliment the tension.
Yeah, it was just so un-Sonia. So it just seems like a weird little, like, hill for her to die on.
The cottages are lovely, though. They're very clean. They're very country. They've got that New England vibe, you know, like floating linen curtains with an open window.
I literally looked at these rooms and was just like, I could quite happily be wheeled here to die. Like, they are phenomenal.
That is where I'm going to die, going mad, staring at the sea. This is perfect.
We finally got a location for it.
I love that. I love that we've been able to pin it down. I'll have a wicker rocking chair and I'll constantly have like a thick tartan blanket over my lap.
Cashmere, of course.
Cashmere, obviously. I'll leave everything to my ragdoll cat.
Oh, what a life. That honestly sounds like my idea of heaven.
My will, actually, at the minute, if I die tomorrow, half of everything I own goes straight to the Cats Protection Society.
Incredible. I love that. Nice, though. I haven't even considered making a will. I was like, I don't really have any assets. There's nothing really that I've got that would be.
I only have it because of the flat.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. I mean, and your business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that thing that you make money from.
Take it, they can take it, see if I care. Jesus. And then Dorinda's like, wow, look at that rock, that's a great rock. It reminds me of, do you remember there was like a tweet and it was some council in America or something that was like, warning on the A12, there's a boulder in the road the size of a small boulder or something. Approximately the size of a small boulder.
Oh god, I forgot about that. I love such a blatant misuse of it, like the English language.
Sonia takes one breath of fresh air on the terrace and says she feels horny again, and I was like, babe, when did you stop being horny?
Yeah, I don't remember a point where Sonia was ever like not into the idea of having sex with anything that moved, considering that so far she's hit on the guy that owns the cornfields at the orchard, and she was definitely trying to hit on the guy that got them out the bus.
There was that random 12-year-old at the party in the Ralph Lauren. Oh, there was the guy at the vineyard, wine tasting guy.
Yes. I mean, I don't know why she's saying it like she's been missing it for however long. She's going on like her husband's gone off to war and she's just like, oh, I finally feel something again.
This is literally me when I had that dream about being literally held. Oh, God, it's so depressing. I just want someone to, like, kiss the top of my head. I would die if that happened to me.
Oh, you know, times are getting hard, though, when it's, like, the smallest, like, just the nice little gestures that you really miss the most.
I feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I feel like we're over the worst of lockdown because I think the country realises that the economy is just not going to survive if we don't get over it. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, but that is the way that it's going to go.
Exactly. And that's the decision that they've made. So I'm still going to be very, very cautious, but I'm also going to take the opportunity to sit in the sun with my friends at opposite ends of our garden and just talk to other humans.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's like being socialized a bit is super important.
Yeah, I hadn't really realized how much it like really affected me until like the last few weeks where I was like, God, I just miss other people, like not even necessarily having the conversation. I just miss the presence of like being in a group of people that you're comfortable with.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone is also so tangibly randy at the minute.
Yeah.
So I went out yesterday and I swear, like, I wasn't even looking that good or anything. I got aggressively stared at, like, a lot, which I wasn't necessarily complaining about. I mean, I was, like, playing up to it at this point. And then I went to go and get a coffee and the guy was like, what are you doing later? Where do you work? And I was kind of like, okay, I'm not going to tell you where my office is. But then I was also like, well, I know where to come if I want attention and coffee now.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the perfect sort of double deal.
Yeah, everything just feels very, like, hot and heavy at the moment. Just out and about. It's also the summer. I think summer just generally gets you a bit like that.
It definitely brings it out in you, 100%.
So then Ramona somehow decides that she was put on the spot by Leah into accepting her sister's invitation, says she's going to tell her at dinner tonight and will Sonia have her back? She says she doesn't feel like the dynamic will be good. And it's like, ugh, if only you knew at this point, like, how much you're going to throw off the dynamic anyway.
Oh, God, I know. Like, with the forethought, foresight, of it, it really would have just been for the greater good of everybody if she'd just been like, yeah, that's fine. And that would have been it. It's all it had to be. But and also, this is Ramona who last episode, literally at the end of last episode, was like, I just love bringing groups of different women together so they can network and meet each other.
I just love women.
But not women that I don't know.
But not isolated young mums that are, you know, possibly just looking for a break for a couple of days.
Yeah, just a little bit of time away with their sister who they don't see all that much.
So just prior to the dinner, Leah storms into Tinsley's room and she is fully, like, locked, loaded.
She's got, like, the wild-eyed kind of look of somebody who is, like, gunning for a meltdown.
Leah seems really sad that her and Peter Chip aren't friends anymore, but as discussed, he just sounds like an utter knob. I mean, he's sending her nudes to people and then he's not even calling her back. Like, mate, you've had a lucky escape.
Yeah, like, why are you, like, out of everybody as well, like, I would have thought she was one of the very few people who would have just been like, right, well, you're lost, see you later. So I don't understand how she's become so, like, in her own words, psycho bitch about it.
Yeah, this seems a very high tolerance to bullshit, which I didn't really expect from Leah. I thought she would be, you know, much more blunt. Because I feel like what some men don't realise, what some people don't realise in general, actually, I'm sure women as well, is that if you want to friend zone someone, you know, you still have to be kind.
Yeah, you can't just put them in this zone and then you just treat them like shit. It's like, well, then you're not a friend. You've just dumped me.
Yeah, at that point, you're just icing people out. And that's fine. But then you just need to accept that for what it is. So if someone does that to you, don't then try and maintain a friendship. Just be like, all right, cut it off, whatever.
Exactly. And I thought she would be a much more, like, no bullshit approach to this kind of thing. So I was quite shocked at her response to it.
I mean, she's obviously displacing this upset about the romantic situation into the drinking. She's doing a lot of, like, hysterical giggling. And you can kind of tell that Dorinda at this point is pretty happy to not be the sloppy drunk one at this stage in the night.
Yeah, and I think this is why Dorinda was so supportive. Like I say, like, I sort of agreed with her about her wanting to get, you know, people just to stop judging her so much. But also, Dorinda was just thrilled that somebody was, like, the crazy one and the drunk one and the one that is just making a scene for a change.
Yeah, I agree. The clambake setting is pretty cool. It's very romantic. It did have, like, a vow renewal vibe.
I was kind of half expecting Ramona to just, like, wheel out Mario and be like, surprise!
Sonia is in a full-on, like, drama teacher blanket poncho and she's just, like, wandering over to the bar. You know, it's one of those, like, asymmetrical ones. Drama teachers loved a good poncho. That's just universal.
Oh, it's 100%. It's, like, always got, like, a waterfall drapey vibe to it.
A Lagan look.
Yes! All of my art teachers.
Oscar. And always with a chunky bangle or a chunky necklace.
Yes. Oh my God. My mum is super into this vibe as well. Like, she does it in a much more stylish way. Like, she's got, like, a Moschino, like, cashmere poncho, but it's still a poncho. And she also has these great big, like, resin bangles that have, like, dead, like, massive dead beetles inside.
That is amazing.
So she kind of, like, she's very into this, like, big drapey. I always tell her that she looks like a widowed art teacher. And it's very that kind of vibe, but she manages to style it out.
I love that. I've come to realize that, like, as I go through my mid-20s, like, I'm just morphing slowly into that drama teacher from every, like, mid-noughties coming of age rom-com film that's like super supportive, you know, always has like a bit of a wild hairdo, wearing something patchwork, something that looks like a carpet or a curtain that's been reappropriated into a garment.
I really love that vibe though. I'm very into the things that you've been wearing at the minute.
Thank you. Ramona has bought them all star crowns. They're actually pretty chic. I would like one.
I would also like one. It seemed like a very sort of non-contextual gift, but I did like them.
Ramona is trying to stop Leah from upping her alcohol intake. So Ramona has gone from it's a democracy to like I'm in charge, big government.
Returned to full dictator potential.
Alcohol quotas for every individual. And Dorinda naturally is in favour of her being able to do what she wants. Again, like you said, I think because it largely deflects.
Yeah, 100%. And it means that she can get a little bit sloppy and know that she's already not going to be the sloppiest person at this table.
Ramona does make a valid point as well, albeit in an extremely clunky way, when she points out that someone who hasn't been drinking for such a large stretch of time is going to have a weakened tolerance to alcohol.
Yeah, and I think Luan sort of explained it better when she was just like, look, she, like, you don't have like the tolerance kind of thing. But the way that Ramona was just like, well, you're a recovering alcoholic, like you can't drink anymore, which was just not the right way to approach that. And also was not correct to call her a recovering alcoholic when, if she's never called herself that, I don't think it's right to sort of project that onto her.
Yeah, yeah, that felt. I was actually surprised that Leah let that comment slide.
Yeah, I thought she was really going to go at her with that one.
We start to get these kind of aerial swooping shots of the table, which almost felt like drone footage, which I have to say, I don't think helped my general feelings of nausea.
No, they were very sort of seasick, lost at sea kind of thing. But also, I just kind of couldn't help thinking, as they were eating, was there literally just little mini drones or cameras on sticks, essentially, just swooping about over their heads, which must have been really distracting.
Yeah, must have been. Although I think you get to a point where you probably just stop seeing them.
Yeah, I guess you kind of tune it out after a while, wouldn't you?
Leah points at Ramona and Sonia and goes, you're mean and you're a hater. At no point are these ladies like all seated and served. It's literally just chaos from the outset. You've got different people standing up, sitting down. You have plates coming out sort of erratically. Leah is on Sonia's lap. Dorinda tries to give a toast. Ramona and Dorinda at one point just kiss tenderly on the lips and among all of this.
And whilst all of this is happening, we've got that beautiful shot of Luan trying to put on the bib.
Oh, yeah.
He's just struggling with the plastic bag.
Sonia and Leah start to chase each other around the table. I think Ramona actually dealt with this very well.
I did. I mean, if I was Ramona and I'd have gone to all this effort to make something so nice, I'd have been pretty pissed off as well that there was just like fucking carnage unfolding around me.
So Ramona takes Leah aside and says she would love to meet her sister at another time. And Leah's like, don't even go there with me, bitch. And then we just get a flashback to Dorinda and Tinsley at the table. And Dorinda's like, you know, I eat what I think. I think what I love. Dorinda has just fully descended into a full-on, like, theatre of the absurd monologue.
I truly just started to lose the thread of, like, what was happening at this point. I felt like every time I wrote something down, I looked up and there was things happening where I was like, wait, how did we get here? Like.
Yeah, in the next shot, Leah just chucks a martini glass over her shoulder onto the lawn, and then she starts grabbing at the flowers, and yeah. Ramona is so calm throughout all of this.
At one point, Leah's shoe is off, and she's just kind of beating the ground with her other shoe.
The girls seem completely unable to reel her in, and I just, yeah, at this point, when I was watching it, I was like, I didn't feel good about it, you know? It was a kind of drunk that I've only been a handful of times back in, like, high school and uni, and it's to me, it's like a deeply hysterical, deeply unhappy kind of drunk where you're just teetering on, bursting into hysterical tears at a moment's notice.
Yeah, and I mean, that's exactly what happens as well, isn't it? And I agree, it's that kind of drunk that you get when you're like, you're really hurting about something. So you kind of think, oh, if I just, you know, I'll have a few drinks with like the girls or whatever, and it'll cheer me up. And you just, it's almost like you're, because your emotions are so much more heightened, like alcohol affects you so much more, and you just go into this like weird dark place. It's like what I was saying, like when my anxiety was super bad, like I would drink the same amount that I would drink like on a night out, whatever, now, but I would just, before I knew it, would just be like hysterically crying for no reason. And I think that's kind of what happened here, where it was just like hysteria and chaos. Like she was kicking at the cameraman, and then like Sonia was like dragging her by her feet, and they were just screaming, and it was just, there was so much happening. You could tell it came from this like total overboard of emotional place.
Yeah, because the alcohol gives you the permission to actually express those emotions, where if you haven't found an outlet for it in your day-to-day life, you know, you're not as likely to do that. So it gets channeled into just this absolute kind of chaotic behavior. And so Ramona walks off with her, and I think she kind of dealt with this quite well. I wasn't expecting it from her at all. And then back at the table, Luana's like, she can't handle herself, she destroyed the flowers. But as she says this, she literally has a sprig of flower tucked behind her ear. I don't know if you noticed that.
I missed that. Well, she obviously was benefiting from the destruction.
I mean, that's very the Countess, isn't it? Like, completely blind to your own transgressions.
Oh, God.
To me, I don't know about you, but the whole scene was just a headache from start to finish. And it was actually, when I thought about it, just distressing.
Yeah, I was the same, where it was like, it wasn't the kind of like the funny drunk, like the Tiki Torches, where you're kind of like so into it and you think it's just like that funny, silly, kind of relatable, daft stuff that you do when you've maybe had one too many. This was like a proper like painful drunk, and it was like difficult to watch.
I would have loved to be in that pool nude with the Tiki Torches. Like, that looked like a fun time. Whereas this, when she's just weeping at the end, it's almost like a Renaissance painting. She's like, you know, bright red, open mouthed. It's not nice, just being held and like sort of comforted.
Yeah, and it's like, it's so hard to see, because she's kind of like, she comes across as such like a sort of like open, like to the point kind of person. So it's kind of clear that actually she's been suppressing so much stuff, and it's all just kind of came out in this situation. And I mean, Sonia obviously starts saying that she thinks like Leah might have like a split personality and stuff, which is like a heavy judgment call to make on somebody you don't know that well. But I can sort of see where she's coming from when she sees these two different sides of Leah.
Yeah, I mean, I once went out with someone that was like, drunk me and sober me are two different people. And I was like, well, that's a fucking red flag, isn't it? Bye. Of course I didn't do that. That would be sensible. But I think that's what she was alluding to, just like two completely different sides of the coin.
Yeah, I think so. But I also love that during all of this, Luan's just like, oh, I'm just so over it. Like, I can't, you know, have you ever seen me behave this way? And then there was just that fucking montage of Luan just falling into different bushes while they were in like Miami or wherever it was.
I also like the little edit at the end where Leah's being held, and it just cuts to Tinsley, and it's almost like she's short-circuited. She's just glassy-eyed and open-mouthed in a silver jumpsuit, like clutching her drink. She's just like, what am I watching?
You can tell that like Tinsley just doesn't know how to handle this. I feel like the rest of the women, like, obviously they have a little bit of like age and wisdom on their side, but I also feel like, because all three of them, like Ramona, Dorinda and Sonia, have all been this person at some point. Like, there is not one of them that has not been like sloppy, screechy, ruined a dinner, over the top and kind of just uncomfortable. So I kind of, it's why I was on board with Dorinda saying like you shouldn't be judging her, but also you could tell that they were just far better equipped to deal with her than anybody else at that table was.
Yeah, 100%. And they've all been that to varying different degrees as well.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously we got that full montage of like Dorinda being like, oh, at least I didn't get a mugshot from it, when she like threw the glass at Luan, and there's been so many instances with Sonia and Ramona. So it's kind of like, yeah, like they do feel like they're kind of getting a bit judgy when they're not in a place to be judging.
The next day, they're all regrouping and Leah claims she isn't hungover in the morning.
Yeah, bullshit.
I think Elise was pretty fair to make those comments as well. Like, I would have said something similar. Yeah.
I think the thing with, like, Elise is because she has this very, like, upright, like, deadpan way of speaking that sometimes it comes across in this kind of, like, snooty, airy, judgy sort of way. But I don't think she means it that way half the time.
Look, I like Elise. I don't know if that makes me strange. I can't fully explain why, but I, at the moment, I'm liking her. What can I say?
No, I'm so on board with Elise as well. Like, I know a lot of people have been quite divided about her, but I actually really, really like her. I think she's very wise, and I think she's got some very good insights into the women.
Yeah, she's not trying to overtake anything, but equally, like, she's putting her input in when it's needed.
Yeah, like even when she sat on the sofa with Ramona the next morning and she's just like, well, I don't think it was right of Leah to ask, but also once you said yes, you shouldn't have taken it back again because it just caused such more like distress.
So they split into their two factions in the cars and they hop off at like an old timey shopping area. They go into a clothes shop. The shop assistant, Ramona and Leah, are all wearing leopard print tops. And I was like, oh, a cursed garment. Leah walks out swearing. She's basically just having a bit of a temper tantrum.
Yeah, like I sort of understood her grounds of that in that scenario, because obviously like Elise was saying, like, well, how would you feel if your daughter behaved that way and stuff? And like, once again, I get what Elise was saying, but I also think Leah's right in saying that, you know, she doesn't know her. She doesn't know her daughter. Her daughter's also 12. So especially if you're definitely hungover and maybe have a little bit of like frustration still from the night before, I would probably be a bit like, can you just not?
Yeah. And then I think Dorinda's going to die on this hill defending Leah because it's everything that like normalizes and takes the heat off her. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly why she's being so defensive of her. And I think she does sort of see a little bit of like herself in Leah. So I think she's trying to sort of like cling on to that. And in the same as Luann's drinking, where she's trying to be like, this is all fine. You're all just out of order.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Ramona says she completely blacked out Leah's behavior. And you just hear Sonia's voice in the background being like, she grew up in chaos.
Yeah.
And it's strange, you know, because at the start of this interaction, Leah clearly does feel very bad. And then Luann kind of goes on Leah's side and kind of insinuates that Ramona is conspiring against her and goes in on her and sort of says, why are you making her feel guilty? And I don't know, who do you believe in this? Do you think that Ramona genuinely is kind of triggered in some way by this? Or
I'm not entirely sure. Like, far be it from me to kind of say what does and doesn't trigger somebody, but I think Ramona was just using it maybe as a bit of a get out as to why she was then, because I didn't understand why she was just suddenly stood with her back to Leah and Tinsley and like completely blocking them out of the group.
I didn't even notice that, but yeah. I think Ramona must have made a conscious decision not to be provoked by the behavior for sure. Do I think she blacked it out? I don't know if I'd agree with it to that extent, but I think she obviously could have chosen to retaliate and didn't, which was interesting. And I wonder why she didn't do that, because I think under normal circumstances, she would have. And at the cocktail party she had at her flat last week, you know, she basically kicked Dorinda out for making a scene.
Yeah, so it was very one rule for one and one rule for another. Like, I don't know if Ramona feels kind of motherly with Leah, so she didn't want to have that reaction with her, or maybe they just know a little bit more than we do. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe there's some stuff that they've kind of been let in on that makes them kind of a little bit more lenient with her. But yeah, it was kind of like just at the end, it was like Leah and Tinsley were like against the railings and Ramona sort of literally just stood with her back to them and blocked them out of the full group, which I think is what started that conversation.
Well, Leah goes from being apologetic to being like, I am who I am. And so I wanted to know how much time actually elapsed between these two conversations. You know, were they drinking? What happened to make her change her tack? Because to me, it felt like a complete reversal of tone.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Like, and I kind of wish they had sometimes they gave us a bit of that in the editing, kind of, you know, was like, look, this was like 3 hours ago and 3 hours has passed between this, or at least sort of spliced things together where it made a bit more sense, because it just makes her look like she's just like so erratically flip-flopping that I don't really know what's real.
Demand a Chiron.
I need timesheets, I need facts, I need data, because I don't know what the fuck is happening.
So then in the preview, we see Dorinda getting upset in a very teary way. I'm guessing this coincides with Richard's anniversary.
Yeah, I think it's probably been unfortunate timing on that behalf, which is possibly also why Dorinda was being so lenient with Leah, is because she's possibly planning on also just being that fucked up.
Yeah, and just feeling a bit like vulnerable and soft and upset herself.
Yeah, like, do we have another, is the next episode still in Rhode Island?
By the looks of it, because we have Ramona in a bar making fun of someone from being from like rural Arkansas.
Yeah. Oh god.
You can tell that Ramona, like, between the East Coast and the West Coast, like, America does not exist to her.
Yeah.
She's like, it's New York, it's Miami, it's Cali, you know, that's it.
The Midwest doesn't exist. There's certainly nothing in the North.
And then we see Leah, like, just chucking food.
Yeah, she throws some fucking gnocchi at them.
Ravioli.
Ravioli, sorry, yes, ravioli, which is actually somehow better and worse at the same time.
Raviolis were flying.
And again, Dorinda seems positively gleeful about this when Luan tells her.
Yeah, she's like, oh my god, I can't believe I missed this.
And you can tell that she is genuinely furious that she missed watching all of that unfold.
And again, Ramona doesn't seem to retaliate in the way that you would expect her to.
I just don't know what's going on with Ramona. Like, what is happening? What is happening in the context of her life that is making her so much better behaved and more tolerant?
It's very odd.
I wonder if it's anything to do with, like, Mario, or maybe she has a guy, or maybe something to do with her daughter or something. Which, speaking of, did you see, oh, you don't follow any of them on Instagram, do you?
No, update me.
Oh my god, so Ramona put up a video of her and Avery, like her daughter, watching this episode. And Avery was just like slagging the shit out of Leah and saying like she finds it really embarrassing, like the show and all this sort of stuff. So Leah was literally like dragging Avery all through Instagram, like telling her to sit down, and it was embarrassing that her mother behaved this way. And then her sister provided some context of this, where apparently Ramona literally shit herself on the trip and was still trying to pick up guys.
Oh, what?
Honestly, it was a wild ride.
Oh my god, okay. I think I need to go and delve into this. So you can follow Faith on Instagram at Faith_Elizabeth, 2 H's in Faith. And you can check out her work on her website at faithrichardson.co.uk. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Louisa G. Rogers. And you can check out my website, louisarogers.net. We'll speak to you on Thursday.